On this week's episode, we're going to be talking Alonso's new contract, a 2025 calendar, and of course, our first return to China since 2019. Let's go. Hello and welcome to another episode of Back of the Grid. I'm your host this week, Tom, and I am joined by Chris.
Hello.
And Stu.
Hello.
Yeah, so this week we've got a preview.
You sound so happy to see us, Tom.
I'm just presenting, mate.
Sorry.
It's kind of my job. just doing the hello. Presenting
yes,
thing,
hello.
Mate.
Hello. I'm here.
They're here.
Sorry,
again.
Carry on.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. So anyway, yeah.
There you go. Bring that YouTube happiness, mate.
We're going to be looking ahead to the Chinese GP this week, which feels like quite a long time since we've been able to do, seeing as how the last time we were there was 5 years ago now, isn't it?
Yeah.
5 years? Is that how long it is?
2019.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah.
I did see a list of like all the things last time we were in China. It was like... I think Verstappen had only won like five races at that point in time, and like Hamilton was on like however many win streak and however many championship streak and stuff. A lot has changed since then.
What a difference half a decade makes.
Well, yeah, we put it that way, I suppose.
Yeah. We've also got some other bits of news from around the paddock. So, like I led into at the beginning, we've got Alonso's new contract. So, Chris, do you want to kick us off there?
Yeah, a driver will probably be there in another half a decade, the way Alonso is going.
Yeah.
For now, he's signed another two-year deal at Aston Martin, keeps him there till the end of 2026, which I suppose, given that that's the first year of the new regulations, is no accident that he's sticking around to see what they're like, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, he said retirement was never even an option. It was more just a case of where he's going to be driving. It does mean that by midway through the 2026 season, he'll become the oldest F1 driver since Graham Hill.
Wow. That's
kind of crazy. A lot of like interesting stuff around this, though. Because I think we can be pretty sure he's had conversations with Red Bull, which I think is true of most drivers on the grid. I don't think realistically Red Bull ever really wanted a driver like Alonso. We know he was... on Mercedes shopping list as well. He's had conversations with them. But he's opted to stay put. So I suppose as a starting point, that is an insight into Fernando Alonso's review of what Mercedes have been able to show him for the next couple of years, I suppose.
Like, maybe.
At the very least, they've not been able to show him anything that makes him think they can do anything better for him than Aston Martin can in the next couple of years.
Well, yeah, and it tells you all you need to know about the Mercedes engine, I think. That's what we were saying the other day, wasn't it, Chris?
Like, yeah.
You know, I've said before that the Honda engine is, I think it's the fastest, and I think it's definitely the most reliable. They've been more or less flawless for the last, well, as long as Verstappen's been winning championships. And the Mercedes just doesn't seem to be as quick as it. And if you're Fernando Alonso and you know you've got the best engine coming with the team that you're already with, and there's even talk of sort of them trying to poach Adrian Newey from Red Bull, then I think that's enough to make you want to stay. I don't think Mercedes have got enough to draw him out of the Aston Martin circle.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a good point just come up in chat from Sarah. Like, it could well be as well that Mercedes were maybe only willing to offer him that one-year deal. And he wants the longevity to see himself like pretty much guaranteed a seat for the new regs. Whereas, yeah, if he went for one season at Burke and it didn't work out for some reason, he's then struggling to find a seat for that.
Yeah, so. I think that's a factor. And I think that's going to prove to be a real problem for Mercedes, that they've got a driver waiting in the wings they want to put in a seat. But they're going to struggle to find someone who will be happy to sign a one-year deal knowing they're keeping the seat warm for an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
Going back to the engine thing, it's interesting as well against the backdrop of the last time Alonso drove with a Honda engine and how much of a just all around disaster that was. And for now, that's a clearly be a big factor in his choice now, is the fact that it's with Honda engines. Just shows how much things have changed and how much Honda have turned things around since then.
Yeah, totally.
The GP2 engine days.
Yeah, I mean, those days are long gone, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but that's just completely weirdly reminded me of Lance Stroll in the Japanese GP the other week. Did you hear his radio when he was struggling on the straights? It was like,
had a bit of a GP yeah. moment, didn't
yeah, he? It was basically like, there's just no power on the straight. But it's like his voice was so animated, and it just like randomly popped in because you said the GP2 engine thing, and yeah. I think on commentary they made a comment of that's Lance's own version of the previous formula.
Yeah, totally. Like,
in
and
the
I
same
do
place as well.
I heard that, and it did make me wonder, like, what sort of NDAs some of the drivers must have signed for Mercedes, who are driving Mercedes cars, because that's the first time I think we've heard anyone actually. We've heard hints of it from maybe Hamilton that like he's not got enough speed on the straights, but everyone's always put it down to the car. This is the first time I think that we've heard a driver complain about engine power from a Mercedes engine, which again is just evidence mounting to say that this Mercedes engine just doesn't have the goods.
Yeah, I think I've been pointed out in chat. He said he called it a different category during his message in Japan. Like
much more diplomatic way of putting it.
Yeah.
Maybe that explains why Stroll still got a seat at Aston. Very diplomatic.
Yeah.
I guess there's also a big difference between driving a customer engine or a factory engine as well. Like in all of the times that you had the Red Bull drivers complain about Renault engines, you never heard a peep from the actual Renault drivers complaining about their engines.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. I guess the main complaint was the reliability in that for that though, wasn't it? It wasn't necessarily always power. It was more like the Honda thing was generally power and lack thereof.
Power and reliability, it was both.
There was an element of it for sure, yeah. But like the complaints themselves were generally focused around the lack of power. Whereas the Renault situation at Red Bull felt a lot more like we cannot rely on these engines, especially like when you'd got situations like it going pop in, I don't know, Austria, and you got all those expletives out of Max as he was trying to pull it up at the side of the road and stuff like that. Like, yeah, it felt like same thing for sure, but like maybe a different a different cause, a different reason.
Right in front of us in Hungary as well, if you remember. That was another.
Yeah, that was Ricardo.
Oh, was that Ricardo that we saw? Yeah.
That was Ricardo.
But yeah, this has a pretty big impact on what is already a very volatile driver market as well. It's sort of taken one of the top names and one of the top seats out of the mix. I suppose Mercedes will start with, because we know for a fact Alonso was on Mercedes' shopping list, and that's an option gone for them now. And then it was also a potential spot for Sainz. I think it was a less likely seat for Sainz than a lot of the other ones. Like ultimately, were they ever going to get rid of Lance? Probably not. And were they going to swap one Spanish driver for another Spanish driver? Also, probably not. I suppose you can cover both of them, because at this point in time, do Sainz and Mercedes meeting up in the middle seem like the best solution to that problem?
Not for Sainz, I don't think.
Again, it goes back to the 1 year problem, doesn't it? Yeah. Mercedes have got.
They've generated themselves a problem in the sense of they've made it very clear that Kimi's the guy for that seat from like 2026 onwards.
Yeah.
In theory, they've been very. They should have maybe kept their cards a little bit close to their chest in that regard, and then they'd probably get people still jumping at the chance to be with a manufacturer team. But
the thing is that they don't want to lose Kimi Antonelli either. That's the thing, because they lost Verstappen.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
So,
finding the line.
I think
isn't it?
Maybe. Well, I don't think they could have done anything differently, to be honest. I think it was always going to be pretty obvious to everyone once Antonelli jumped from what, European? Did the Verstappen? Hasn't he done the Verstappen jump from Formula E?
Very similar.
Oh no, it's the opposite, isn't it? That was Formula 3 to Formula 1. This is Formula 4 to F2.
Yeah.
So it's like a tier down on both counts.
Yeah.
But I think looking at Antonelli's track record, and then people were gonna, you know, if he's already on Mercedes books, people are gonna draw that conclusion no matter what when you make a jump over a formula. And I think if he performs, which it looks that there's signs that there have been signs that he's starting to progress in an F2 car already, that, you know, if that progression continues, then by the end of the season, I think he will win. I think he'll win an F2 race as a minimum this season, Antonelli. I think there's a bit of talk on the internet about, you know, people, I mean, Mercedes haters in general, just hating on the guy before he's even got to Mercedes. But I do think he'll win a race. And I think
same with anyone in that position.
Well, yeah, same with any young talent, isn't it?
You heard
it with
Max, and you've heard it with others before.
That, yeah. The point I'm making is he is going to show how good he is in F2 at some point this season. He's going to start coming good. And then if Mercedes didn't already have their hands on him, then someone else would be trying to get in there and get him. So, you know, they had to do it the way they've done it. And it's a small price to pay. It's only one season where they, you know, worst comes to worst, you might end up with a Perez in there, or you might end up with a Bottas in there, or you might end up with a Magnussen in there, absolute worst case scenario. But that's only for a year. And if all your eggs in the basket for 2026, then, you know, don't worry about it.
I actually hadn't thought of that possibility until you mentioned his name, but actually, Sainz going to Sauber and Bottas going back to Mercedes for 1 year. Don't hate that as a possibility. Bottas a bit of a swan song back at Mercedes, because I mean, with the best will in the world, I think Bottas is, I don't know if he's got that much more to offer at this point in time.
Has the ship sailed, Chris?
I think the Bottas ship might be sailing. I don't think Audi are going to want him ultimately. And that's
it's been a roller coaster,
really. Still love the guy, but is that what you do if you were Sainz at this point in time? Take the Sauber to Audi risk?
No, I'd try and get in a Red Bull.
I think that's the only other good option. In realistic terms, but I've been saying it since day one. I think that the Sauber for Audi is the route that he will end up going, and I then just the Hamilton situation does present that interesting possibility of Sauber and Audi keeping the existing relationship with Zhou Guanyu, and then it actually being Bottas that goes to Mercedes to fill that seat for a year, possibly. Which I'd not really thought about it like that. I genuinely thought of it more the other way, where it would be Bottas and Sainz together if it was going to happen. But
Here's what Carlos Sainz needs to do this year. Carlos Sainz needs to win a world championship this season. And then Ferrari will be like, oh, actually, I think we've kept the wrong driver. I think we need to get rid of Charles Leclerc and we'll keep Carlos Sainz, because then we get to have the number one in our car.
Yeah, we did have a good chuckle the other day when we were talking about the prospect of Ferrari finally winning a driver's championship this year and then not actually getting to put the number one on the car because they've already got rid of Carlos.
Of course, you know, the reality is Verstappen is going to win this world championship. But, you know, if
you can dream.
You can dream. And if Ferrari's, you know, much vaunted upgrade for Imola, you know, brings up the goods, and it's as good as Carlos Sainz seems to think it's going to be, then, you know, maybe second two thirds of the season, if the gap isn't huge at the moment. So it's not out of the question that they could be in the mix, but I think it'd take a big old upgrade and a lot of, it's still quite a big gap for them to close, but they have solved their tire problems, and but they've gone away to solving their type. I think there's always work to do, isn't there? But, you know, they're almost within touching distance of Red Bull, and I don't think it'd take a huge, huge, huge amount. Certainly, much less than it's taken anyone in this sort of aero reg situation, they're closer than anyone's ever been to Red Bull. And that gap is smaller to Red Bull than it ever has been. So in terms of Ferrari's gap especially. So, yeah, who knows? They might bring themselves into the mix.
That Australia retirement has definitely just kind of helped keep things a bit more in touching distance if they do manage to...
Couple more retirements, Verstappen retirements, would keep things ticking along nicely.
Couple more dodgy breaks.
Yeah.
Definitely.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, on the like signs to Red Bull thing, I still can't see Red Bull wanting that potential volatility in the team, honestly.
Like, I suppose there's enough already, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like, as things currently stand, if Perez can keep up this current level of performance until mid-season, I think they'll give Perez another year, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, right now, Perez is doing the job he's there to do. Last year, he didn't make it to mid-season without that falling off. If he can do it this year, I do think they'll probably end up keeping him. But
yeah. I think they're going to be desperate. I think Perez is a tiny part of Red Bull's plans. I think they can replace Perez in a heartbeat. They're desperate to keep hold of Verstappen. That's happening at
priority
Red Bull.
One by a long
and way. When they don't have Honda engines anymore and they've got the Ford engines, and there's already a bit of talk of maybe this new engine setup they've got isn't quite showing the numbers that they want it to show yet. You know, there are rumors of Verstappen disappearing, going and doing something else. So even though he's got that long contract, like, if he doesn't like what he's getting, there'll be all kinds of release clauses in there and stuff that if the performance isn't there, then he can go. And, you know, you can't blame the guy if he sees an opportunity in another team and suddenly they find themselves, Red Bull find themselves on the back foot and there's someone beating them, then, you know, why wouldn't you try and get a seat at the faster team?
I mean, Lewis Hamilton for next year has proven that all the goodwill towards a team in the world doesn't trump wanting to be in the place you think is going to give you the best results, and ultimately,
we're giving you the championships or the race.
Ultimately, Verstappen's going to look out for Verstappen first, like, no doubt.
Totally, and definitely. Of course, he does. He's, you know, he's a Formula One driver, absolutely well within his rights.
Wouldn't expect
to do that,
different.
You wouldn't expect anything less. Yeah, in fact, if he didn't, then you'd question what the hell he's even doing.
Yeah, well, yeah. There is that, definitely.
We'll have a quick look at the 2025 calendar, which has been confirmed very early in the year, actually. It normally takes a lot longer. It feels like we're barely into 2024 and we've got a 2025 calendar. It's 24 races again. In terms of the actual races, I think it's exactly the same 24, I think I'm right in saying. It's just the order that's been
just
shuffled around.
Order, yeah, pretty much.
They sort of try to lean more into the like geographic grouping thing they've been saying they'll do. And they have done a better job than they have for a long time. Still some weird choices. Yeah. But most notably, season starting in Australia again. And as someone who started off watching F1 in the 90s, that just feels right. Like, Australia
Australia.
Like, even now, like, I don't get that proper, like, oh, the season started feeling until they're in Australia. Like, the first race or two always seems like a bit of a...
It's like testing almost.
Yeah.
It?
Bit of a dress rehearsal.
Yeah. I like it. I think, yeah, I mean, we all said it, I think, this season. But they've only been starting it in Bahrain, I think, since 2020, since COVID. Because Australia, obviously, that was going to be the first race in 2020. And then they showed up in 2020 for the first race of the season and then went home because COVID happened and it was an absolute disaster. And it wasn't until, you know, much later in the year that we even got a Formula One race. Understandably. And since then, they seem to somehow, Bahrain managed to hijack the first race of the season just through virtue of the fact that they were going testing there before. It seems like through virtue of the fact that they were just going testing there before the start of the season.
Is it purely a logistical decision?
Yeah, I get the logic of that. Like, it makes sense. But I think really as a curtain raiser, Bahrain just hasn't really delivered the goods for me. Australia's got a much better, more fan-oriented vibe.
Yeah,
like, it
definitely
feels like a more of a festival, whereas Bahrain just feels like they're in the middle of a desert, middle of nowhere, running around the track, you know? So, yeah, I'm glad they've done that. I'm glad they've started with Australia again.
So just quickly run through it. Starting Australia, followed by China and Japan getting even earlier in the season.
Is this just the Chris names countries podcast? Is this what's going to happen here?
All right. so those three together sort of make sense. Then Bahrain, Saudi Arabia sort of make sense. Then off to Miami. Sure. Then the usual European run, Imola, Monaco, Barcelona. Then the usual thing of, oh, we'll just pop to Canada for a weekend and then pop back to Europe. Austria, Silverstone, Spa, Budapest, Sanford, Monza, Baku. Singapore is a bit of a weird one on its own again. And then to finish the season, it's Austin, Mexico, Sao Paulo, Vegas, then back to the Middle East for LaSalle and still finishing the season in Abu Dhabi, because I think Abu Dhabi pay an extraordinary amount of money to have the privilege of being the last race of the season. And that's
if they want to do that, if they want to pay all their money.
There's nothing that delights me more than when the season's wrapped up a couple of races early.
Yeah, exactly. Just that like, one what reason. Are they really paying for?
It makes a couple of like dull races sort of from a championship perspective, but it gives me a little sort of tinge of happiness or whatever that I know they've paid so much to get the final race.
All they're really paying for is that they're the only race of the season where you get some donuts. That's all they're really getting out of their money.
Literally, for some reason, when you said that, I was thinking, why can't you have donuts for the other race?
Banned. The whole paddock can't have
donuts. No donuts. No donut vendors.
The day I see a Formula One driver eat a donut is the day... Yeah, they are one of the most unhealthy foods you can get.
I don't care about them eating the donuts. It's me there. I don't want to eat the donuts. Oh, mate, I love a donut.
Donuts are one of the reasons I'm not going to fit into my trousers for my wedding. But anyway, that's a whole other story. shall we move on?
Yeah.
I know rules. You guys spoke quite at length about the 2026 rules the other week. So we won't go too deep into this. But there has been in the last week a couple of stories around sort of basically teams have been given a lot of data and models and stuff to do a bunch of testing. The FIA are kind of working in conjunction with the teams on these rules, which makes a lot of sense. Like they're the smart ones. They've got the CFD, the wind tunnels and all that business. And there's been some real issues with these active aero plans that you guys talked about with the movable front and rear wings. Basically, the testing showed that in the lowest downforce config, the cars were basically undrivable, like spinning out under power in a straight line. even the slightest fast curve just spinning out. Apparently, the shift in the aero balance is 3 times bigger than current DRS causes. Wow. So it's no wonder it's causing some issues. One report even said that the issues were so bad, in order to drive in a way that kept the car on the track, they were putting in lap times slower than current Formula 2. So a bit of back to the drawing board on the active aero stuff. As I say, at least the FIA seems to be working with the teams on this. They're generating this data there, having back and forth. Like, I know a couple of team principals have said, like, yes, there's problems, but we're confident that things are moving in the right direction at least.
They I've already heard that one of the solutions to this is actually like to a lot of the aero balance was just coming off the rear of the car and that not really any coming off the front. So the front was getting loads of downforce, getting pulled down to the ground, but the rear is obviously just getting tipped up kind of thing.
Yeah.
When that happens. So they're talking about shifting that balance a little bit more and making it so that the front of the car loses more down, like make it more of a 50-50 way of losing that downforce to increase the speed and make the, you know, add the aero efficiency to the car, which makes sense. I think that is a solution that probably they will work it out. That, you know, they're not daft. I think with stuff like this, you have to be wary about who's making these kinds of comments as well. I think if one particular team sees something they don't like in the wind tunnel, they're probably going to be the one to shout about it the most because they haven't quite figured it out yet. The teams that have figured it out and do think that they can do, you know, you're not going to hear from a team that's doing really, really fast lap times. You know, they'll just stay quiet and then they'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
See what happens. It's the teams that haven't got a solution who are going to scream the loudest about how bad this is going to be for Formula One and therefore themselves.
Yeah, exactly. There's some interesting comments made in Newey as well around the new engines. As you guys talked about, there's the sort of 50-50 power split now between the electrically powered motors and the internal combustion engine. Adrian Newey said it's going to be a, quote, strange formula, because there's going to be times where the internal combustion engine will be getting used as a power generator to recharge the batteries rather than be actually driving the wheels. So he said, as an example, it's entirely possible that you'll see cars going around the Lowe's hairpin at Monaco, the slowest corner on the entire calendar, with the internal combustion engine going flat out because it's generating power to put into the battery, which is
interesting.
Bizarre, yeah. Like,
that's such a I'm trying to like play that in my head as like
I'm trying
clip.
To work out what it'd sound like.
It'd sound crazy because you've got them just going really slowly around the corner, just absolute flat chat. That's
screaming,
so bizarre.
Yeah.
That'd be horrible sound. That would sound rubbish as well.
It sounds pretty
crowd,
awful.
That sounds awful, yeah.
And it's got to be tough. I mean, the drivers don't rely on the engine sound to change gear. Like, they have rev lights, they have beeps in their ears to basically tell them the main thing. But at the same time, like, every other car you've ever driven, you get used to this is the pitch the engine makes, and that's roughly the pitch at where you change gear. So to have the engine just doing something completely detached almost from what you're doing in the cockpit sounds very strange.
Sounds weird, there'll still be the gearbox sound though. That's you tune into just the sound of the gearbox.
Yeah, that's true.
What you'd be using as your audible reference to know when to change gear. Everything else, the brain is really good actually, especially for a Formula One driver. Yeah. They can tune their brains into whatever sound they need to get the gear change. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. But it is a strange. It does sound like a strange situation. Again, though, I'm sure, you know, a lot of this is probably Adrian Newey seeing what Red Bull have got going on in their own engine department and the relationship with Ford. And again, if you know, he's kind of giving away the game a little bit there. He's saying that our power unit as it stands for 2026, is it, won't. He's basically telling, he's giving the whole game away to every other team. Like, this is where we're at. And it's either a very clever game he's playing or he's sort of accidentally given something away. And I don't think Adrian Newey is the kind of bloke who's going to accidentally give things away. So
he must be confident that that is just how they're going to be to say something like that. Yeah. Like, he must be confident that that's just how they're going to be for every. I mean, he could be wrong, but.
He could be wrong.
He's not wrong very often.
It's rare. It's rare that he's wrong about. Yeah, you're right. It's rare that Adrian Newey is wrong about things around race car design, but it's possible. You know, you've got to have every possible piece on the board in front of you, and it's possible that Adrian Newey doesn't have all the pieces of the board in front of him right now because these engines are still kind of, you know, they haven't really set everything in stone for it yet.
And it's getting late in the day as well.
It is getting very late in the day.
Yeah,
I'm getting increasingly concerned about these 2026 rules, to be honest. Like, when you think about the, what was it, 2014, when they first introduced the turbo hybrids, like, we knew about that engine formula for years in advance of it. Like, Mercedes' whole thing was, we know what these are going to be, and they just worked on perfecting that. Like, that was the Mercedes plan back then.
There's an issue with that though, because Mercedes were working on it for so long, they managed to steal a march on everyone else, and that led to that period of dominance for Mercedes. They had the best engine for such a long time, and what they're trying to do is stop people developing too soon so that it's more of a level playing field for everyone. You know, if everyone's starting at the same point, then you kind of, you know, I think it's a much, if you've all got to run 100 meters and you all start at the same time, then that's fair enough. If the starting gun goes off and you don't have time to start at your 100 meter run until sort of 10 seconds after everyone else has started their run, then the race is all but over, isn't it?
I guess my concern with the 2026 rules is there's this whole 50-50 power split thing, which is, like, great, I'm all for it. That's the way the world's going. You know, make the sport greener, more road relevant, whatever. it sort of feels a bit like they came up with that number first and then said, okay, what rules can we write to make the cars fit that, rather than say, we want to make the cars have a sort of better split of electric and power unit. What can we make that will still be a good engine for the sport and also has some nice numbers we can quote? And it feels a little bit like they've done those things the wrong way around, maybe.
Yeah, come up with a number, then try to work out how to hit it, rather than going, how could we improve these engines?
Trying to hit a predefined target that's not necessarily going to actually be a good race car engine.
Or instead of posing it as a question of, how can we better utilize the electric battery part of this power unit? They've instead gone, how do we get it to 50-50?
Yeah.
Well, it just feels like that typical Formula One sort of halfway house kind of contrived way of achieving a goal to me.
Yes.
You know, like they always do this whenever they mess with the rules, whenever they sort of change qualifying and stuff, or all these different iterations of sprint races that everyone apparently loves but no one ever asks for or wants. Everything's always so contrived. They're always sort of like bending over backwards to fit this agenda that they just seem to have come up with all on their own. And
it's like,
go on.
You can see someone in the meeting room being like, oh yeah, let's do that. Like 50-50 is a good number. And all the people on the engineering and rule making side have been like, okay, yeah, we'll go and have a look at what's possible. It's like, no, it's all right. Press release has already gone out 50-50 years.
Yeah.
I see, like, somebody's come up with the idea and someone said, okay, we'll go like look at how we make that possible. And someone's going, oh, well, I've already told the press.
Yeah.
Like, and really it too premature.
They're overcomplicating it. And really what they should be doing, I think, is concentrating more on like what makes Formula One entertaining and what makes it good. And I think one of the best, and this comes, I was reading, we mentioned it, we've been talking about Adrian Newey. I was reading an article, this links really nice actually into the article I was reading about. And it's about how he sees the perfect sort of situation for Formula One going forward. And I won't read the article verbatim or anything like that, but the upshot of it is essentially it's the Colin Chapman approach of simplify and add lightness.
Yeah.
You know, he's saying the cars are way too big, they're way too heavy, and they're way too complicated. And there is an argument. Now, you won't hear me say this that often, but there is an argument to say a high powered combustion engine could be a solution because it's lightweight and it would allow them to make the cars much, much, much smaller. And you can actually run an internal combustion engine much, much more efficiently now than you could in years gone by. And also, you know, the argument that it would make the sport environmentally friendly is kind of silly because the amount of fuel it uses is, you know, the carbon footprint that Formula One causes is not from the cars going around the track. It's from all of the logistics around hosting a Formula One race and getting the cars to where they need to be. And also, even if the cars do have especially efficient engines and, you know, run on electricity or use hydrogen, whatever, that energy has still got to come from somewhere. So it's about what's the most efficient way of generating the energy that a Formula One car can use. And there's an argument to say that a petrol-powered Formula One engine for the sport is a much more efficient way and a cheaper way for everyone of running the sport. And it also could make for much, much better entertainment.
I mean, given that they are, you know, the ICU element, they're making engines that are 50% plus thermally efficient these days, there is an increasing argument that...
With a turbo.
There's an increasing argument that, like, if you can get a biofuel or a synthetic fuel that's going to do the business, just stick that in a V8 or a V10.
Yeah.
And is that going to be that much worse? I read a thing recently discussing this, and I think, going back to what you said, Stu, that in terms of emissions, I think the actual cars running on track was something like 0.6 or 0.7 of a percent of
minuscule
emissions of Formula One as an entity. Yeah. Like, it's headlines, isn't it? It's nice marketing stuff at the end of the day.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you took my summary of that out of my mouth, to be fair there, Chris, because I was going to say if that is the end goal, instead of throwing these numbers, like throwing some numbers on a dartboard, essentially seeing which you hit and going, let's go for that, which is what it feels like they're doing
it
at the minute.
It does feel like that.
Yeah. It's more like an actual effort to better improve a new form of, well, not a new form of technology, but do you know what I mean? Like,
enact meaningful
Formula
change.
One,
like,
yeah. Formula One sees itself as a sport, as the instigator of change in mechanical engineering and the motor industry, generally speaking. And yes, not everything that starts in Formula One ends up in a road car, but a heck of a lot of it does. And if there's ever a place to try and push these manufacturers to make like high performance, like essentially partner with fuel partners and get the best high performance synthetic fuels, this is the end. This is like the series to do it in, realistically, isn't it? And yeah. I think if you turned around and told a team they could go back to a V8 or a V10 engine, and the only caveat was you must use synthetic fuels, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of them jumped at the chance, to be totally honest with you. Just to simplify it a little bit, because obviously you've got so much going on when you are going hybrid. Like, you've got essentially at least two power sources in terms of two units to deal with. You've got all the recovery systems to deal with. Like, there's just so many added points where I'm not saying a high performance V8 engine is simple by any stretch of the imagination, but it's simpler than a V6 turbo hybrid.
Yeah.
When you compare all the factors.
Yeah, when you compare it to what they've currently got, it's immensely simple. It's, you know, it's simple on the level of anyone, pretty much anyone, could go grab a crate LS8 and throw it in the back of anything and make it look good. It might not go as fast as a Formula One car, but, you know, they're simple enough that they'll run on anything as well. They're crazy, crazy robust engines.
And you know, you want to talk about, like, you know, marketing boons and stuff, how good would it be for, you know, let's say Shell to be able to say,
to be,
we are the company that powered the first synthetically fueled Formula One world championship, come buy our synthetic fuel next time you go to the petrol
station.
And pay more for it than you do at any other petrol station, while you're
probably
Do you think that if, let's just say for 1 minute, the FIA, Formula One, whoever would like be the catalyst in that decision, I guess. But let's say that decision is made. There's something that comes in that says, like, from, I don't know, we're gonna do these engines that we've planned for 2026. We're gonna run them until 2030, and in 2030, that's the plan. Like, fully synthetic fuels, back to a V8 engine, for example. Do you think that they would allow multiple fuel partners with each team, like what we currently have, or do you think we'd end up a la Pirelli with a single supplier to even it across the board? Because part of me would actually be quite excited to see, like, fuel wars, like we used to have tire wars, in the sense of,
but we already have that competing. We already have fuel wars, really.
No, that's what I'm saying. So would they continue to allow that, or would we end up in a situation where you get Bridgestone, Pirelli, like there's just a sole supplier at some point?
That'd be a step in the wrong direction for me. Chris. Sorry. Yeah.
I say, I think financially as well, you'd have to keep multiple suppliers because they pump so much money into the teams. Like,
Here's
Petronas pay huge amounts of money towards Mercedes. Yeah.
Same as Shell with Ferrari, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of oil money going into Formula One. I think that's part of the problem at the moment. I think the regulations for me, especially around engines, are far too tight and have been far, far, far too tight for a long, long time. I think we're at a point in technological advances across energy use in motorized vehicles that you could open up the rule book carte blanche and say whoever can make the fastest, efficient, most efficient engine that will get a car around, you know, any track around the specific number of laps that we've got, just go for it. Whoever can make the best engine, then you know, you're going to win races. And these, you know, these teams are all smart enough that they'll come up with all kinds of manners of powering their Formula One cars and in all kinds of exotic ways that we can't even think of here, and that people, you know, will not have even thought of. The research and the development of technology that would happen if they did that would be a quantum leap ahead of any V10 or V8 or hybrid that we've got now. You know, like, you've got all kinds of advancements in combustion engines even. So
yeah,
I think open it up, let them run whatever fuel they want. If they want to run hydrogen fuel cells, let them get out. If they want to produce an electric vehicle, let them get on with it. Make it more like Pike's Peak, where you can just literally race what you brought, show up with like the fastest car and win races.
I mean, that's where we used to be once upon a time, didn't it? I know it's a long time since those days, but
like 70s, 60s.
That was pretty. There was a time, I mean, obviously, not even like we were alive, this is that long ago, but there was a time once upon a time where the rules were basically your car must be open wheeled, your car must be open cockpit, go. That was, I mean, I'm oversimplifying, but that was basically it. And it's,
I think you'd have a weight limit still. I think you'd probably your car has to weigh less than, your car
less than this
must
and more
weigh
than
at
this.
Least, your car must weigh at least X amount.
Yeah.
But I think beyond that, I think that gives them some restriction and makes it so that they've got to, you know, they can't just go and make a huge internal combustion engine and just fill it full of fuel and just make it faster than anything, you know, make it 10,000 horsepower and just send it down the straights like a rocket.
Away you
but
go.
Yeah, I think, you know, open it up. It's due a real sort of paradigm shift and reset. And obviously they're scared to death of it because a lot of what's happening in Formula One is around sponsors and you know, money talks in Formula One. And the people who are pulling the strings are all, so, you know, they will be lobbied by the sponsors and all that kind of thing. They want to take care of the people who are taking them, which is totally understandable. But I think from a fan perspective, it might not sound, maybe some people would say this isn't Formula One, but, you know, Formula One was born out of make the fastest car and race what you brought. And I think when we're getting towards however many 70, 80 years now nearly of Formula One, there's got to come a point where you go for a complete reset and you say technology has progressed so much in the 100 years, say, that obviously it's not 100 years, but since we started racing cars, then it's time to race what you brought again. It's time to come up with the absolute fastest car you can come up with and take the brakes off and send it.
Yeah. I mean, the definition of what Formula One is a constantly changing thing. So,
I'm sure we'll get loads of comments. Maybe people think I'm talking nonsense, but
I
would just love to see
people
go,
this kind of stuff.
I just find it interesting that we started talking about the 2026 rule set and we've basically developed the 2030 rule set as an end.
Well, this is more like the 2050 rule set, I think we're getting towards here, but
we don't need it that far down the line. We'll have it sooner than that.
Let's drag things kicking and screaming back to next year. We'll go as far as next year. Brief one, but an interesting one. Suprema, who have been in making feeder series cars for many, many years now, back to like GP2 and GP3 days, have announced they're going to be entering IndyCar from next year with a two-car team, which I think is interesting if for no other reason than so many Formula One drivers have come through their ranks and so many other drivers have had success with them and then not made it to Formula One because it's such a difficult step up. So it's an interesting new route for these sort of drivers to go. Like you look at, who have we had in recent years? Like a Schwartzman or a Drugovich, you know, these guys who've had so much success in the feeder series and they just get stuck in test driver roles. So,
or they go to Formula E.
Or they go to Formula E, yeah. So it's nice to have sort of another route kind of still within those feeder series team world for them to go.
It's
It's obviously not what they would ideally want, but it's...
Yeah, everyone in Formula 2 wants to progress to Formula 1, don't they? I think if you suddenly end up in Formula 2 and you're in IndyCar and you're a Formula 2 driver, I think deep down you'd see that as a... You wouldn't feel like you're getting what you wanted out of your career, I think. But, yeah, you don't see many IndyCar drivers moving into Formula 1, do you? It kind of becomes its own thing, and it's a bit of a stock series, so... It's interesting news. It gives an extra option for Prema drivers going. It puts them on the radar and makes it possible for you to get up to Formula to IndyCar as maybe a placeholder. But I just don't think the competition in IndyCar compared to Formula 2 and compared to Formula 1 is enough to keep them sharp enough. I think I'd still rather go to like Super Formula or maybe even Formula E, even though it's Formula is just an absolute lottery, but especially the driving standards in Formula 3 are appalling. So at least they get going to IndyCar, you'd at least get a decent driving standards and a bit more respect between drivers. Which is saying something.
Just assume you don't get any respect out of the FIA if you're in IndyCar.
Well, that's it. They won't. Yeah, that's the problem. You'd fall off the Formula 1 radar is the concern, isn't it? So
the afterthought that is.
Yeah.
Anyway,
should we move on to some storylines after that, gents?
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. First one, we have a sprint weekend this weekend, first one of the season. It's also a track we've not been to in many, many years, as we've said, like 5 years ongoing. I mean, this partial resurfacing, albeit they've tried to eliminate some bumps, so that, there's good intentions there, but 5 years.
We all know that whenever they try to eliminate bumps, it just means that they don't eliminate bumps. Bumps just move.
Yeah, they move them.
that or the circuit just becomes like ice, and it's just a slick thing that no one can get grip on. But I mean, we genuinely don't know how it will go because of that. Does it feel like a good idea that it's a sprint weekend on a track we've not been to for so long and has had this resurfacing work, or do you not think it'll make much of a difference?
I don't think it makes much difference.
I think it's a stupid idea. So that's covered the full gamut of answers.
Why is it a stupid idea, Chris?
Yeah, go on.
Track they've not been to in years. I only give them one practice session before they do competitive running. A track that's been resurfaced might be very bumpy. I know a lot of drivers have said there's big potential for the same sort of issues that we had in Austin last year that caused the disqualifications because they're just not going to have the time to dial in their ride heights before they're a lot. Well, at least with the new sprint format, which we'll talk about a bit later on, there is more space for them to dial in the setup at least. Like Parc Fermé isn't...
It reopens after the sprint race, essentially. Is this not by design? Are they not doing this because they want to mix it up a bit? It gives people, the leaders, an opportunity to slip up and gives the chasing pack an opportunity to compete more with, or it might give your Saubers and your Haases of Formula One a chance to mix it a bit more with the midfield if they can get things right and the midfield don't.
Maybe.
That's what they're doing. They're trying to make it. They know like the situation. It's like, how can we throw banana skins at these teams to make things a bit different?
Honestly, I think you're giving somebody out there too much credit.
I was going to say, enjoyed as you're like, have they thought of all these things? The counterpoint from Discord was, or have they just not thought?
Yeah. I think that one could be more
one,
likely.
Could be the other.
Maybe.
Honestly.
Yeah. Who knows? Like. Have I just become Joe Rogan? Do I need a tinfoil hat?
we're talking about like this race being planned by the same people who planned to race in the Middle East during the Eid and Ramadan celebration timeline, like where it meant that you had to shift the whole calendar to accommodate that instead of planning around it like a normal person would. So I genuinely don't think that this has been considered at all. Yeah. But that's just me. Right, another one that we've got on the list is Ferrari. Do we think they could qualify well and give us that fight at the front that we're after?
Not yet. But it is China. And we haven't been there for a
long time. It needs them to qualify well as a starting point, which has not necessarily been the easiest thing for them this year so far. I don't know if this track is going to be the one we're going to see a fight being taken to Red Bull, to be honest. I
a lot of straight line and high speed.
You know, I can't even remember the layout of this track. I'm going to have to go on the Formula One website.
It's pretty good. It's got the big snail.
The big snaily bit.
One.
The big long.
Yeah, this, I like the turn one. Oh, that's F1 TV.
Tightens up. And then you've got the fastish rights and lefts that take you out onto the back, slightly banked right hander. Then you end up on the. I mean, I'm really oversimplifying this lap, but then you've got a huge long straight, which. For a long time was the longest straight in Formula One. Don't know if it still is. I can't remember if anyone's
doesn't look like it now. Long way off.
And then you've got the hairpin at the end of that, and then the left back onto the start finish straight. And there's a lap around China.
I will say, quite a nice circuit. I hate that last corner. That last corner feels like such a
sometimes. Oh, it's off camber, isn't it? That last corner.
Yeah, and it's the one where you always run wide and get. It's the one, if I remember right, it's the one where for so many years, if you got just that little bit too far over it, it essentially. I'm going to be careful how I word this. It dragged you off the circuit as you rode the curb out. It was here, and I feel like Malaysia was similar, but this one was worse. Too far out there, you got dragged off, essentially.
I seem to remember them, actually. I don't know whether it was here or... I don't know if it was China or Malaysia, but they reprofiled the final corner to make it cambered instead of off-camber, to make it so the cars could go faster. And I'm almost... I think it was Shanghai. I think it was Chinese Grand Prix that they did it at. It might have been just around 2018-ish that they did it. So I think that's a much better corner now, actually, turn 16, because it gives people the opportunity to set up and overtake into turn one and to get DRS going and stuff like that, get close to the car ahead. I'm almost certain they've done that, or they've at least they've made it at least so it's level and not off camber, which is important. I don't hate this circuit, actually. I think it's one of the circuits I've driven most on Formula One game in 2010 because that was just, it was an early circuit.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever completed an entire season on that game, but I remember doing a lot of laps around Shanghai and enjoying it. So
it's definitely one of the better Tilkodromes, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forget it's one of those. Forgot about that. Right. Any other storylines that either of you want to add to this? They're the main two we bullet pointed, but.
I mean,
can Mercedes just sort something out? You know, are the temperatures going to match what Mercedes need for their car? It sounds like the ambient and track temperatures have a huge bearing on their performance. And will Williams have two cars there? Or not?
Yeah, actually, that's not a guaranteed thing yet, is it?
Mm.
I think the other thing I'm finding interesting this season is that bottom half fight, the fight among the bottom five teams of who might nick a 9th or 10th place, because that's been so close every race so far this year.
Yeah.
That's well worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
Cool. Right. Well, with that all being said, let's do some predictions. So for those of you who are newer, you can head to backofthegrid.com to find out a bit more about the predictions game we play. But we're essentially about to make 5 predictions for this weekend's race, and you can join us by doing the same on the website. And if you do and manage to get 5 out of 5 correct, you win a prize. So it's always worth entering every race.
And we need to be quick because we don't have much time.
We do indeed. So we're going to be quite quick with this. But yeah, fastest in Q3. Any takers on this one first?
I'm going to go Verstappen, obviously.
Going Verstappen. Chris?
I keep leaning towards a Ferrari and it never quite happens. So... I am going to say Verstappen this week, which probably guarantees it will be a Ferrari.
I'm going to be that one of us that goes for the unconventional non-Verstappen and say Sainz, the form he's been on recently. But I'm going to be boring when I follow this up with the race winner by saying that will still be Verstappen. How about Chris? What about you on the other side of this?
I think for this track, I have to agree with you and say Verstappen.
And Stu?
Double Verstappen.
Double Verstappen. First DNF.
Verstappen.
Just go Verstappen all five. I mean, you can't do that.
Finishers, Verstappen. Random driver.
Verstappen.
First DNF is going to be... Williams are on an absolute shaky thing. Oh, you know what, actually? This seems like a really good time to do the classic, what you've done, Tom. The cruel driver
so
exit.
Cruel.
I mean, if you want to do it, okay, if you're going to go for it, it's usually my thing, but if you're going to go for it, I'll go for something slightly different. I will, on that note, go for... Lance Stroll. Why not? Chris?
I'm going to go for a Magnussen, I think.
Magnussen. That feels like it could.
Gets
pretty tight pretty quick as you get further and further round, and you get that bit where it starts dropping off and dipping away.
Someone in the middle getting caught up, I think.
And these cars are humongous as well compared to any other time we've been
compared
there.
Compared to what we were racing there 2019. Yeah.
Literal tankers of vehicles. So, yeah.
Number of finishers. I'll go first. I'm going to say 16. It feels safe. Anyone else?
I'm going to go 18.
I'm going to split you both then. I'll go 17.
Nice and simple. And our random driver for this week is Logan Sargeant, which feels...
19th.
Oh, fair. So Stu has him DNFing at some point, just not first. Chris, anything from you?
I'm going to have him not DNFing and put him 17th.
Okay. You're basically doing exactly what I've done and having him finishing not last but penultimate on the road, so I'm going to go 15th because I've got 16
probably
finishes.
An Alpine or a Sauber behind him.
I'm going to assume similar. So that is that. And as I said before, if you want to head to backofthegrid.com, there's information there. It will also have information there for the fantasy leagues we do. We do one on the official F1 fantasy game. We also play one through Grid Rival. You can join both of those through the website. With this being a sprint weekend and a bit of a new format, we have elected that we always usually qualify this at the start of Q1. But because of the way the weekend plays out this weekend, we will be closing predictions at the start of the sprint qualifying. So although there's no scoring during the sprint races, that is when we'll be closing, because that's when you're going to start to see effectively your real running order. So we're going to be closing it there, which if you are UK based or are aware of GMT, that's 8:30 on Saturday morning?
Friday morning. 8 a.m.
Friday morning,
isn't it? Is it 8 a.m. or
8:30.
Okay.
So, yes, get your predictions in ASAP. It's already open. Even if you're listening live, it's open. So go get your predictions in. And, they will lock.
I should really submit my predictions this week.
You should. As should everyone.
And I didn't submit. Did I get those points? Or
no? I always add you in manually if I see that you've forgotten to do it, don't you worry.
You're so kind. Thank you.
Yeah. That offer only applies to hosts, I'm afraid, before I start getting DMs.
We can't be doing that. There's too many people.
We have recorded evidence that we've chosen.
Cut it out. Right, I'm going to move us on to inbox because we are running out of time.
Keep it saying now.
Stay out.
Inbox. Hey, man.
What's the first one?
First question from Bird. Not clear if it's Sam or not. How about each driver being allowed to pick one race where they can get double points, their home race or a specific favourite, or more likely one that suits their car and driving style? Look forward to hearing your thoughts. Thanks again for the podcast and Prediction League. Thank you for that question, Bernie Eccleston in disguise.
Yeah, literally.
Bernie Eccleston.
I will take your double points idea and raise you. The driver can pick a hazard for each race that spices things up. That could be a wet race. We could have a joker lap.
Perhaps a banana skin.
Some banana skin. Some shells. I don't know if that's Formula One. There's room in, there's space in the world for that concept, but I don't think Formula One is the forum
where it feels more of a Formula E or a World Rally Cross, something like that kind of thing.
I don't hate it, but I just don't. I think the Formula is something that would never happen. Another interesting, like, sort of building on the idea as well is, like, what do you think people would pick? What would Max Verstappen pick as his, as his race where he could get double points? Obviously, you'd pick your home race, wouldn't you?
I'd have thought he'd go
or he just pick the first race because he's guaranteed to win them all anyway, and then he just hasn't got to worry about it for the rest of the season.
Well,
Sarah in the chat said Williams can pick a race to have an extra chassis. Oh, Williams. Poor Williams.
William.
Yeah. Next one is from Jason Marshall. He says, "Hey guys, love the podcast. I must listen every week." Thank you, Jason Marshall. As a relatively new F1 fan, I'd love to attend Silverstone this year. Can you recommend the best way to purchase tickets? Can you go through Silverstone or are there other sources?" It feels like Silverstone themselves have sent this question just to get a bit of a plug.
Would you recommend going to Silverstone.com?
The best way to get
Silverstone site has.
The best way to get Silverstone tickets is to go onto GitHub, set up some sort of bot, and also take out a huge bank loan.
I mean, the best way to get tickets is to have a high amount of disposable income. is the simple answer, because they're not cheap. As a serious answer to this question, if you weren't ever buying them direct through a circuit, like, because pretty much every circuit sells the tickets directly, I don't know if you two have ever used this, but I've used the Motorsports tickets website, which obviously don't just do F1, they do a bit of everything, but also their stuff, some of them are like hospitality packages, and you've got like accommodation and travel, and you can do all sorts of things. But I can safely say that I've used sites like that before, like when I got our tickets for Budapest, for example. They came through that site, if I remember rightly.
I'm not going to tell you how I got my tickets for the majority of Formula One races that I've been to.
But I think I'm right in saying for Silverstone, you can buy them through third-party places, but they're going to cost you basically the same everywhere, so you might as well take the safe choice and just...
The only advantage of a third party generally is if you want some sort of package deal, like travel or accommodation included in it, or like one of the VIP packages that they can offer, that kind of thing. There you go. And then last one for this week, Andrea Hanna says, "How do you guys like this new sprint format? Do you think it might be better now, especially with the new Parc Fermé rules? And what do you think about two of them in a row with Miami coming up next? Are these good tracks for them in the first place?"
So just to clarify quickly, people who don't know, the new format is Friday, practice one and sprint qualifying. Saturday, the sprint race, and then Grand Prix qualifying later in the day, and then Grand Prix on Sunday as normal. And I believe Parc Fermé closes at the start of sprint qualifying, but then reopens after the sprint race, so they can make changes to set up before Grand Prix qualifying.
I think if they're going to have sprint qualifying, I think this is the way. This is finally like the most effective way of having meaningful running on every point of this is to have meaningful running on every day of the Formula One event. If they're going to crack it, this is the way they're going to crack it. But I think part of the problem is it's just a shorter Grand Prix. It's just this. It's effectively going to be just the same as what we get in the Grand Prix. So it's kind of like almost a preview event.
It's a preview of the first stint, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And is that bringing much to the table, or is that just going to mean that the Grand Prix is just going to be a rerun of the day before? Probably.
I still think you'd have to tweak something about the way that you are allowed to go about setup or strategy or something for the sprints, just to add that twist to them. And I think until they find something like that, it'll never truly stand out as anything other than like a preview of the Grand Prix itself.
Yeah, I think I still think it needs to be a reverse championship grid race. I think that you still have your qualifying, your practice sessions on a Friday, two practice sessions, so everyone can get set up and understand ride heights and whatnot, especially with these cars. Saturday morning, reverse. No, actually, Saturday morning qualifying, Saturday afternoon, reverse championship grid, sprint race, Sunday, Grand Prix. There you go. Solved it. Mm-hmm. That way, the two events are different. You don't get the same thing twice.
I feel like we've said this every time.
Well, I'll say it every time.
Weekend. So.
And still haven't listened to us.
No, still have not. Mm-hmm. That is it for this week. So
quick mention before you wrap up. If the Chinese Grand Prix is not enough for you this weekend, there's also the WEC 6 hours of Imola and the IndyCar Grand Prix of Long Beach happening Sunday as well. So,
yeah. Are any of those at more hospitable times for me as a British viewer?
IndyCar's at 8 p.m. IndyCar's 8 p.m.
That's and I think WEC
mid-afternoon the WEC. At 1. So WEC will be finished by about 7 p.m. Got an hour to have something to eat.
Pop over to Indy.
Back for IndyCar. Mm. Perfect.
I mean, that sounds like a good weekend if you ask me.
Yeah.
Coming from the Formula One podcast host. I know I'm definitely not getting up at 4 a.m. to watch a sprint race. That is a fact you can all have for free.
Yeah, that's ludicrous.
That is not happening. Sorry, but it's not. Either of you getting up? I doubt it.
Heck no.
Or are you staying up?
Also,
Stu looked like he legitimately contemplated that for a split second.
Not with my parents visiting this weekend, otherwise maybe, but no. Straight Stu's through thinking, crew.
Stu's thinking, can we play Helldivers until 3:30 in the morning and then just start watching the race?
That or Final Fantasy VII. I am loving Final Fantasy VII. So anyway, this is not interesting. This is not content that people care about.
That is a sidetrack. Oh, you'd be surprised.
Take us home, Tom.
Yes. If you want to get in touch with us, reach out to us in all the normal ways. We're on X, we're on Facebook, and we're on Instagram. You can head to the website, backofthegrid.com, which you'll have all the stuff for predictions like we talked about earlier. And there's also a contact form to let us know that what you think that way. And then lastly, if you are watching this through YouTube, please remember to like and subscribe and even give it a share if you know somebody else who might be of interest. And make sure you leave a comment with anything that you want to add to what we've said or questions for the inbox, because we do check through those as well.
Yeah.
That is it for this week. Enjoy the Chinese Grand Prix, however much of it you feel you are capable to get up for live. If not, enjoy the highlights with me. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you, patrons. Goodbye.